is the Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
Usually we focus really hard on agriculture at the start of the Country Hour and how it affects you in your life. This is something that affects all of us in regional Victoria. 19 of the top 20 locations for family violence incidents are in regional Victoria. Whilst we're talking domestic violence, whilst we're talking family violence, it's a regional Victorian problem, more so than nearly anywhere else in the state. So we'll have a look at that at the start of the program. Nearly half or around half the women who have died violently to partners in Australia this year are from regional Australia. Do we need to talk about this more? We will do just that to start our program today on the Country Hour. Also coming up as we move through the afternoon, we'll also talk milk prices with the industry talking down the price at the moment. You'll hear that and a response from dairy farmers today on the program. And also the deadly nature of bulker bags. Do you think they're a safe way of sending around things like fertilizer and seed and other important agricultural equipment and inputs? You can let us know on that too. 1300 977 222 if you'd like to call us. But we'll start with, how to get help, particularly in terms of domestic violence, next on the Country Hour.
The Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
It's a huge problem. It's a regional Victorian problem. 19 of the top 20 regions for family violence incidents in this state are regional Victoria. Our homes. Rural health advocates are calling for tailored government policies to support women fleeing violence in rural and farming communities. Yesterday, the federal government announced it would spend more than $925 million over the next 5 years to provide people with financial assistance to help them flee violent relationships. People will be able to access payments worth $5,000 to help them escape abusive situations, with the funding to be contained in and outlined in next fortnight's budget. However, CEO of Women's Health Grampians in Central Victoria, Marianne Hendren, says the policies and funding are too generic and don't take the challenges for rural family violence scenarios into consideration.
I couldn't see anything that was specifically seeming to be targeted at rural and regional communities. From what I can see, the top line item is the package to support women who are leaving unsafe and risky situations. As someone who works in a rural and regional area, we're acutely aware of the disproportionate rates of family violence reporting that occur in rural and regional areas of Victoria and across the country. That would say to me, and I know my colleagues in all these rural areas, that there is a need for a rural and regional targeted approach that, you know, an approach that takes account of what we know to be the factors that contribute to those higher rates.
And what are some of those factors?
So, look, I mean, take for instance the $5,000 leaving funding. That assumes that someone has got somewhere safer to go to. You know, $5,000 obviously will help with removal costs, with, you know, changing utilities, with, you know, children's schools, with those sort of functional things. But the key thing, I think, that, say, a woman who is leaving an unsafe situation, who has children, the key thing she will be seeking is somewhere that is safer for her and her children to live. And, you know, what we do see is a shortage of secure, affordable housing in rural and regional areas in particular. So without a focus on making housing a priority as well, I think that the $5,000 isn't going to really make a huge impact for women who leave and want to remain in a regional area, want to keep their kids in school or whatever.
The other thing that is very different in rural and especially farming communities as opposed to larger areas such as cities is the visibility of people in these areas. You quite often are surrounded by many people that you and your potential perpetrator have known potentially for your entire lives. So there's no anonymity in these areas for these women either, is there?
Look, that's exactly right. I think you're visible. You know, you can be isolated, but yet you can also be, you cannot conceal a lot of aspects of your life coming and going. People will see you, you know, if you're leaving in a vehicle with your children, people will notice that. Relationships can be quite sort of interconnected and entwined. So perpetrators knowing, you know, say police or other service providers that a woman might be wanting to access can be a big deterrent or can actually make things more unsafe. So that lack of privacy and lack of anonymity and lack of place to kind of be under the radar is certainly a big issue.
You mentioned the police response, for example. Do you think that particularly in rural areas where if a cop car does show up to your house and it's extremely obvious, there is actually a level of shame or embarrassment that some victims would feel as to calling those services?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the stigma and it's the shame and stigma, but there is also more risk, you know, because you're going to be seen and you're going to be identifiable. So, you know, it's a huge deterrent, I think. Yeah.
The other thing that quite often farmers and especially farming families have to deal with is also the fiscal and business consequences as well. If you're a husband and wife team, for example, on the farm, you're also losing your job.
That's exactly right. I mean, a farm is a workplace as well as a home. The knowledge and awareness of the consequences of, you know, a breakup in a farming situation can often be a big deterrent to women deciding, you know, not to take that step because of the implications for, you know, obviously personally, but also for the children and for other family members who may be impacted, you know, parents-in-law, parents, whatever. So, yeah, it becomes a much more complex scenario to be facing when you know, there's farming property like that.
If you got to sit down today with the Prime Minister, Maryanne, what would your number one request be to help people in regional areas deal with family violence, especially those on farm?
I would say that investment in remote area design support services would be very, very important. I think funding services to have the ability to, say, support women away from, you know, their local town where they might be seen, and also having, you know, electronic and remote systems and options, not just in regards to the justice system, but in terms of direct supports for women. So thinking very laterally about ways that people can be supported in the context of isolation and rurality.
That is Maryanne Hendren, CEO of Women's Health Grampian, speaking there to Jane McNaughton. And remember, for confidential information, counselling and support, 1-800-RESPECT is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to people impacted by domestic, family or sexual violence. You can call 1-800-737-732, which is 1-800-RESPECT, or there is also the online service 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. About to talk milk prices here on the Country Hour. It is 13 past 12. Greg's on the line, 1-300-977-222. Hi, Greg.
How you going?
Yeah, good. What did you want to say?
I've been listening to Raph this morning. I've been listening to Rochelle, his name. And the other week, Rochelle was on the radio saying how lazy men were, and she obviously doesn't like men. But you've got a whole program load this morning where men are villains, men are evil, men need intergenerational change, men have to change. I think it's about time that somebody at the ABC says, look, hang on a minute. There's some men out there that are perpetrators of domestic violence. There's some women out there that do the wrong thing. But not all men are bad. And if you feel the need, the ABC feel the need to engage in
Greg, we don't do shows about sunshine and rainbows all the time, though, do we? So, you know, it's like any industry. There's always an element of the industry doing the right thing. People saying, oh, you just need to talk about all the good things. No, you need to face up to the bad things, don't you, Greg? You need to face up to the huge amount of deaths that are happening. The stats say 19 out of 20 regions of regional Victoria are the worst regions for domestic violence. We have to hear these stories, otherwise nothing's going to change.
You're saying that all men are bad and all men need
No, I'm not, Greg. I'm Greg. No, I'm not. And no one has said that to you, Greg. They've said it's a men's problem and it needs to fix because men statistically are the reason for so many of these deaths. And if you can't handle hearing that, maybe you need to talk to other men in your life and make sure that they know this is a problem that everyone can be involved in fixing. It's not a shot at you individually. It's a shot at the source of the problem and saying that we need to do better as a community to do that. It's not just you. It's a wider issue than that. Thanks for your call all the same. 1300 977 222. I just couldn't keep hearing. Not all. Because it is something we need to all take part of and talk about, especially when you look at statistics like this, especially when we're talking about resources for regional women off farming communities, which Jane was doing just there, talking about the holes in services and where things need to change to get better to help people in tough situations. You can send a text 0467 842 722. Let's talk milk prices now, which is a hard thing to go from a caller like that to talk about another major issue affecting the dairy industry, but it's something we should talk about because on June the 3rd this year, because it's June 1st is on a weekend, dairy companies have to publish what their minimum milk price will be for the next 12 months under the mandatory dairy code. And the industry, after years of high prices, is looking at a price cut this year. And a group representing milk processors is warning Australian farmers that they are being paid much more than the world dairy price. The Australian Dairy Products Federation has released data it says shows farmers in Australia are being paid a premium of as much as 30%. And as the clock ticks on the new season's milk prices, which will be announced in the beginning of June, CEO of the ADPF, Janine Waller, is warning farmers that price cuts could be coming.
Thank you very much, Warwick. What we're trying to do is really put down some facts so that there's a clear understanding of the market signals leading into 1 June. And I know it's always, as you said, a significant time of the year for farmers. And we're just trying to lay out the lay of the land, what's happening locally, what's happening internationally, what's important in terms of milk price and the variables that are going to impact it.
What is the lay of the land as we stand in May 2024?
Yeah, as you said, for us it's really around trying to paint the picture as to what's going on. So we're looking locally and we're looking internationally. And I think the biggest point is that there's clearly a disconnect between the global commodity prices, so the prices of your powders, your cheese, your butter, and the farm gate milk price that we're seeing here. And that's really what we're trying to help the farmer understand is what's actually going on and what will that then mean in terms of 1 June and the prices that they may see.
So your argument is that milk is overpriced in Australia right now?
It's more just trying to highlight the facts as to what goes into the milk price in Australia. And at the moment, we're not competitive with what's going on internationally. The key thing for us is making sure that we're here for the long term. So processors need farmers, farmers need processors. But the price that we're paying for raw milk at the moment is not sustainable. And it's more trying to paint the picture as best we can as to all of the variables that go into setting milk price as we head into the new season.
So paint that picture. Talk numbers. What are we looking at here? How much more is the industry paying for milk in Australia compared to competitors around the world?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest indicator that we use is a term called the commodity milk value, and I don't want to complicate by terms. So simply it's a forward price indicator. It's a mechanism that we can use that gives us a bit of an indication around milk price. And at the moment, that's sitting at about $7.30 per kilogram of milk solids. maybe the number not as important as the difference to what we're currently paying for milk at the moment. So it's a 30% less than, or $2 less than what we're paying for our average price of milk in our southern region, which is sitting at about $9.40 per kilo of milk solids. So it's that big difference. You've got a 30%, $2 less differential between that value and the price that we're paying at the moment. In addition to that, though, we look at spot prices. So we look at the prices of what's going on with cheese, milk powders, et cetera. And that's really thinking about where does milk end up. The most significant drop we've seen has been with cheese. So that's down almost 30%. So again, that's important because the bulk, you could almost say almost sort of 40, 50% of our milk is going into cheese. And when the price of that is dropping at a global level, it obviously means then that there's a consequence because our cost of production is still going up.
So you're saying that dairy farmers should expect a 30% fall in price when it comes to June?
No. Our role as ADPF is really to talk about the landscape. What happens in terms of numbers is really between processors and farmers. What we're trying to explain, as you said, is just all of the variables that are at play. One of those is, you know, what's happening with the commodity milk value. You've got to overlay that with imports and what's happening from that perspective. We've got a whole raft of imports, you know, cheese and butter coming into the country. Exports are down. So processors look at a whole raft of variables when they're looking at milk price. They'll look at product mix, market mix, freight costs. So there's a whole raft of other costs that go into the mix. And what we're just trying to do is help explain what's happening with each of those different variables. So when it comes to the processor having that discussion with the farmer, they're as informed as they possibly can.
Is it any real surprise that a group representing largely processors would say milk's overpriced?
So we're not saying it's overpriced. You've got to be careful, obviously, with the language that we're using. As you said, compared to what's happening internationally, there's clearly a disconnect. So there's obviously a high cost. But as you said, it's recognising milk is such an important ingredient. So we want to be fair to the farmer, and it's about being fair to the processor because we want everybody to be here for the long term. You know, we look at our communities and you've got typically a processor sitting at the heart of that community. You know, they're creating jobs, they're supporting your local footy team. So we want the processing sector to be viable, but we also want the farmer to be viable. And as you said, at the moment, there is a high cost for raw milk compared to what's happening internationally. And really what it's trying to put it into perspective is we are seeing, from a processing perspective, businesses close. You know, that's the reality that's happened because of the tough market conditions. But that's also a sign of them rationalising so that they can make sure that supply meets their business model and that they're here for the long term as well.
When you talk about the state of play the dairy industry has found itself in is a supply and demand situation, hasn't it? Because of either actions of previous processors, some of which don't exist anymore, the milk pool in Australia shrunk significantly, and to keep factories going, processors had to overpay. So do you worry for the industry, if you're looking at the wider landscape, if the price drops next season, more farmers will simply exit the industry and you'll remain in this difficult spiral that the industry can't get itself out of?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely valid. I mean, as you said, supply demand is part of it, but there's so many other elements that are at play. I think it's about how do we make sure that we are the right size so that we've got the supply that we need, that we can pay a fair price for that, and that we can compete locally and internationally. And it's really about getting that balance right. And ideally, you know, getting the farmer having his product value and the process of obviously being sustainable at the same time.
So how do you do that? Because it's a balancing act, isn't it, for the industry? You can't afford too many more farmers to leave, but you can't afford processors continually losing money.
100%. As you said, it's sort of the business 101. And there's so many factors as to why production has dropped. You know, when you look at it from a farmer perspective, they've had challenges with input costs and labour and competing land uses, whether it's, you know, beef versus dairy. So there's so many factors that are at play that we've got to work through collectively to go, how do we get the right volume of milk that we need at the right time of year for the right price, so that, as you said, you've got the farmer that is here for the long term and you've got the processor that's here for the long term, and we can compete with all of the products on a local perspective and also internationally.
You've been very careful with your words here. Are you under pressure from processors to come out and talk about the state of play, given the concerns they have?
I wouldn't say we are under pressure. This is what I would see as the role as ADPF. You know, we are here to represent, yes, we're here to represent dairy processors, but we're here for the dairy sector, because without farmers, we don't work. Processors, we rely on farmers. Farmers rely on processors. So absolutely, I'm here to make sure that we can talk to, as you said, a significant date that's coming up in 1 June, present the facts. But ultimately, we want to have a strong industry moving forward, because what we're trying to do is make sure that there's no surprises going into 1 June. And as you said, that we are all here for the long term.
Well, Janine Waller, it's been great to talk to you today on the Country Hour. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks, Warwick.
Janine Waller, the CEO of the Australian Dairy Products Federation, represents largely processors about the, well, basically saying Australian farmers are overpaid by, and just providing facts and information to the industry. Mark Billing is with Dairy Farmers Victoria, dairy farmer at Colac, can join us on the program now for a producer point of view. Mark Billing, welcome back to the Country Hour.
Afternoon, Warwick.
What was it like listening to that? It sounds like you got a pay cut on the way.
Pay cut on the way. Look, I think the language, we do need to be very careful here. So overpaying of dairy farmers, that never exists. So that's the first point. I think the second point that I need to make is that the pricing that we're operating under at the moment was the making of the processes, and that's supply and demand at the 1st of June last year. And the demand for securing milk gave us the milk prices that we ended up for this season. So the processors went into this season with their eyes open. They do spend a lot of money on analysts looking at projections and supply and demand, obviously the global pricing and so on. So, yeah, it's not dairy farmers' fault that we're getting the prices we are. But
saying that, Saputo, one of the major processors, has sent a letter to farmers this week on the 30th of April. And in there, and I'll quote it to you, it says, "Our analysis to date indicates an early guidance range for a weighted average farm gate milk price of between $7.80 to $8 a kilogram milk solids. And as usual, we'd expect to review prices during the year as we see more market certainty. This is an early guidance only, not our opening price." That's not quite the 30%, but it's over a 20% fall in milk prices. It's telling producers you could be getting. Can the farming community take a 20% haircut on price this season?
Oh, look, the short answer is no, and I think a milk price with a 7 in front of it would send shudders through the industry. And look, Janine was right in saying that we need processors as much as they need us as farmers, but a $7 milk price would see a significant drop in the milk pool, because that's just not sustainable at the farm level. Janine talked about the issues.
So if the milk price is that low, farmers will leave the industry. That's your view?
Oh, look, I think there would be significant pressure, downward pressure on the milk pool if we had a 7 in front of our milk price going into next season. Because our costs have risen a great deal as well. So, I mean, Janine talked about the cost pressures that processors are facing. We're facing the same pressures, and throw into that, you know, climate variability. So southwest Victoria is screaming for rain at the moment. The other regions are not doing too bad, but there's significant cost pressure still out there. So, look, at the Dairy Farmers Victoria Forum a couple of weeks ago, we had an independent analysis presented to us, and it was talking around the mid-$8 dollars potentially as an opening price. Now, there's lots of caveats around that, because that was a price at a point in time. But I think in reality, yes, I think most farmers, dairy farmers, realise that the global market isn't producing the milk price that we're getting right now. But at the same time, you know, I don't want to be accused of talking down milk price, because the issue for us is, if there is more than a 10% drop in milk price, I would suggest that would have a significant impact on the milk pool. That would have a significant impact on investment across the industry, not only at farm level, but at processor level as well. And you know, the pressure that that might create, even within financial institutions, looking at the dairy industry as an investment point.
Is this a nervous month ahead then, Mark Billy?
What was that? Sorry.
Is it a nervous month ahead?
I look nervous, yeah, always. Warwick, I think I've always called it the silly season because, you know, we don't quite know where it's going to land. My guess is, given that we haven't seen some of the processes that come out early, haven't come out yet, I think there's going to be a lot of sitting and watching. We might go back into a cycle whereby the opening might be a little bit lower, but step-ups will be more of a reality than they were the last couple of years. That's a situation that's unique to Australia as well. And I think talking about the uniqueness of Australia is the pressures that are on dairy farmers in Australia are very different to other regions around the globe. So, and our operating conditions are very different. So we are a different industry, simple as that. Even looking at New Zealand, where their growing season is much longer than ours, particularly in pasture, which is our cheapest form of production. So I think the issues are there, without a doubt. Do we need to challenge the norm of the current milk pricing system? We might need to in the future. But right now, we need to have that sustainable milk price across the board. And we don't want to see too much contraction of the milk pool than it is now. It's stabilised in the last 12 months, and there's no doubt that's on the back of a reasonable milk price. I wouldn't say a high milk price. It's always reasonable. As a producer,
you would say that as a producer too, wouldn't you? Hey, Mark Billing, this is just the start of a conversation. I feel like we will speak more over this next month. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Not a problem at all.
Mark Billing there from Dairy Farmers Victoria joining you on the Country Hour. So many texts coming in on so much of what we've been speaking about. I will try and reflect that to you shortly on the program, but we do need to get rural news first to you on the show today, and we can do that right now with Jane McNaughton. Welcome, Jane.
Good afternoon, Woz. DNA testing has confirmed fire ants detected at a southern Queensland defence base are connected to the existing Brisbane infestation, but how they spread has not been determined. The Queensland Premier, Stephen Miles, told Parliament it was highly unlikely the fire ants came from a turf farm, but they have been contained within the Swartz Barracks at Oakley, about 30 kilometres west of Toowoomba. In a statement, a defence spokesman said the department is working with the eradication program to mitigate the spread, and that it applies stringent biosecurity protocols on its land, including restrictions on movement of soil, pests and weeds. But the Invasive Species Council Advocacy Manager, Rhys Pienta, says an audit of all nearby bases is needed.
It could have been there for years. Reproductive queens were found in the colonies, which shows that these nests have been established at the site for some time. So one of the surprising things about the nests that have been detected is they're in two very tight clusters at Schwartz Barracks. So there's something like 78 to around 120 nests, all tightly packed into a very small area on the property. That's surprising because fire ant nests usually do spread out, but it's also very encouraging because the fact that they've now checked 70 hectares around and not found any further nests, it's probably a sign that they might not have spread.
Let's head to Bachelor, just south of Darwin now, where the Top End's only major abattoir has reopened for another season. Rum Jungle Meat Exports is killing cattle 2 days a week and boning another three, before aiming to ramp up production in the next few months. Plant manager Kerry Kane says he's working towards getting the abattoir to operate throughout more of the year.
So we've started over the last 3 weeks and we've been going pretty good. I'm all about getting the jungle, the rum, 10 months of the year and longer. The benefits through that is through community-wise, workers being here, they know that they get consistent work, wages, and so on, and that's a flow-on effect through all of us. For me, for this year, when we had the off-season before we started, we had a few projects going on inside the production area, minor changes to improve capacity to make us get more throughput as we ramp up.
And sticking with Northern Territory abattoirs, it's been almost 25 years since the Katherine Meatworks was shut down. At its peak, the abattoir was killing about 750 cattle a day and employed about 120 people. But the Katherine Meatworks today is up for sale. Alison Ross is from Elders Real Estate in Katherine and says the site is still in good condition.
So the site has still got all the meatworks infrastructure in place. The owners have been maintaining it. The refrigeration has been in operation. There are some short-term leases there in place. And also some livestock has been grazed on the parcel of land and utilising the yards there. So, yeah, it's still being in use, but just not in that meat processing operation.
A fishing trip in the Northern Territory has gone horribly wrong for a group of mates. Four men were fishing about 160 kilometres west of Darwin when their boat started to sink. Luckily, a nearby commercial fishing boat was able to rescue the group before the boat went down. Grant Barker from Northern Wildcatch Seafood says one of his vessels was called in to help and it made it just in time.
Couldn't get the engine going. The vessel started taking on water because the waves would have been coming over the front. Bilge pumps couldn't keep up. So, you know, unless someone rescues them, those guys are in the water. The boat travelled pretty quickly to them, a little bit over 2 hours travel time, and got to them and got the men on board and took the boat in tow, and it sunk pretty quickly because it already had a heap of water in it. So the boat was a total loss for those guys, but we got them safely on board and spent the day punching up into 20 to 25 knot easterly winds back to Darwin.
And the final results of a survey identifying the needs of West Australian farmers facing ongoing drought conditions will be delayed by 1 week to allow more participants to respond. The survey was launched by the state government's Dry Season Task Force as part of its plan to better understand the issues facing WA farmers. Sheep Producers Australia CEO Bonnie Skinner says the extension will allow more data to be captured.
The questions in the survey extend to beyond just feed and fodder availability. It's just to understand exactly what the current situation is on farm. So feed availability, water availability, what sort of management decisions people are undertaking, what access to options that, you know, they've got to turn off stock. So all that information will be provided to the task force.
And that's it for today's Rural News.
Thank you very much for that, Jane. Jane McNaughton there with Rural News for you today. Checking our text line just before we head to the weather. A lot of you wanting to have your say on milk prices. I'll get to that after we talk weather on the issue of domestic violence in regional Victoria and what to do about it and if the assistance from government is actually going to help women, particularly off farms, as we were speaking about earlier in the program. A lot of you having your say, Warwick. Thanks for standing up to that caller. Domestic violence is an issue that affects everyone. Holding your hands up and saying, it's not me, stop hating on men, is no longer acceptable. Do all men have younger men in your life? Are you discussing domestic violence with them? How did young men learn that violence is a crime against society by our elders talking about it and modelling respectful behaviour, says Catherine in Sale. Warwick, you're not there for your opinion. You're the host of the program. Hear both sides of the debate, says Ian. Ian, I don't think it's a debate that women are being killed by men, though, right? Like, that's not something to be debated. We're talking statistics there, and they are huge in regional Victoria. That is a fact. Well said, Watts. One female killed every 4 days. This needs to be discussed at all levels. All governments on both sides at all levels have failed. Too many coroner reports and royal commissions have had their recommendations ignored or not implemented. And Maggie says, thanks for talking about the issue of women's death in rural areas. Lots of good men, some bad men. You need to call out the rotten ones, says Maggie on the text. And cutting a caller off was that those attitudes are underpinning the men's problem, says this text as well. A lot more coming in on that. On dairy prices, on milk prices, I'll get to those in a moment. We'll go to Michael Efron first, who is a senior forecaster at the Weather Bureau right now. You can text us 0467 842 722. Michael, though, the weather, it's been pretty stable. Is it continuing that way?
G'day, Warwick. Certainly has been stable, and I think that will continue not just through the rest of the week and the weekend, but even into early next week. We've got a strong and slow-moving high-pressure system southwest of the state. And it's going to move very slowly east over the next 5 days or so. And so we'll see a continuation of these fairly cool east to southeasterly winds. Does mean the mornings will be frosty, especially over inland parts, but in the south, a little bit more cloud cover, but still quite cool, and also ideal conditions for some fog patches as well. So this morning, we saw temperatures down to zero at Rutherglen and Wangaratta. So a pretty chilly start to the day there. But at the moment, we're seeing partly cloudy skies in the south, sunny conditions across the north. And in terms of temperatures this afternoon, through those northern districts, typically 20 to 22 degrees, and in the south, around 17 to 19 degrees. And not too much change as we head into Friday. We'll see some morning fog and frost again, and then a mostly sunny day for inland parts, partly cloudy in the south. There is a slight chance of a shower through northern parts of the Mallee tomorrow, so Mildura could see a shower or two, but there won't be too much in that. Most of the activity over the border into New South Wales. And then on the weekend, we are looking at that high just moving very slowly east. So again, partly cloudy in the south, mostly sunny in the north. Slight chance of a shower across the Gippsland region. So Sale and Bairnsdale could pick up a shower or two. More likely, I think, on the Sunday compared to the Saturday. But again, temperatures around 17 to 19 in the south, 20 to 23 across the north. And then into next week, that high starts to cross Tasmania on Monday. So we will see slightly warmer conditions inland, temperatures around 21 to 24 degrees. In the south, around 18 to 20. Once more, early fog and maybe some frost. On Tuesday, we see the winds tending northeasterly. So those temperatures climbing a touch in the south, up to around 19 to 21 degrees in the north, low to mid-20s again. And then next Wednesday, looking at another dry and partly cloudy day with that high just moving to our east. So very little change, no sign of any significant rainfall as well. And we did see quite dry conditions across the west and southwest and also eastern Victoria during April. So we are in need of some rainfall, but unfortunately nothing in the outlook at the moment.
Oh, yes, too right, Michael. Any warnings we need to be aware of before we let you go?
Not at the moment. Just keep an eye out potentially for frost warning for parts of the north and east with those chilly conditions expected again tomorrow morning.
Brilliant. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Warwick.
Michael Efron there, Senior Forecaster at the Weather Bureau with his forecast for the next few days or so. You can keep the text coming. We'll talk milk prices. Well, we were talking milk prices just before the news, rural news and weather. A lot of you wanting to have your say on that. If dairy farmers are facing a massive cut in price again, then many more are going to leave the industry again, says this texter. Another one saying they keep referring to the discount. Nice buzzword of global commodity prices and farm gate milk price. This, in my view, is a misleading comparison in justifying a farm gate milk price reduction next season. What really needs to be focused on is what the international overseas processors are paying their farmers for the raw milk, not the end product comparison that is sold into the world markets. Right now, to be clear, we're getting paid or receiving relatively the same as overseas farmers that what they're receiving for milk, not more and not $2 a kilogram milk solids more. Only New Zealand are being paid less, and they're an outlier. This text has sent in a price comparison which shows similar prices with Ireland, France, Germany, Netherlands, Denmark's a bit lower, Poland's higher, and then New Zealand being quite lower on the line. I think I'll have to do more investigation into that, but thank you for sending it through. Another one, get the violin out for the processor rep. Holy cow, says that text message. Another one on dairy prices, I think, saying we're sick of you lot telling us how to think. Another one here saying we're not in a commodity producing milk market anymore. Comparing our prices to New Zealand is wrong. That's not our industry. Our price is on par with a majority of other dairy countries that aren't bulk export producers. Most processors are still making large profits, says that text. Keep them coming, 0467 842 722. You might want to talk to me about bulker bags as well, with farmers in the thick of sowing and once again having to wrangle bulker bags. They're consistently described as things like death traps by farm safety experts who have some advice on how to handle them safely. They typically hold a ton of seed or fertilizer designed to be raised in a forklift or tractor and emptied by a spout that is manually untied from below. In 2012, a Western Victorian farmer, Damien Brown, was emptying a bulker bag when it gave way and crushed him to death. And Sam Pritchard, founder of farm safety consultancy People in Paddocks, says bulker bags need to be handled with extreme caution.
There's two aspects that are really important with bulker bags for knowledge, and that is the safety factor and the type of bulker bag that you're dealing with. So with a safety factor, typically there's a ratio, and it will typically be 5 to 1 or 6 to 1. 5 to 1 means that the bag can hold 5 times the bag's working loads, and a 5 to 1 indicates a single-use bag. That's probably the most important factor that we try and stress with farmers, is try not to ever reuse a bulker bag.
And Sam, even, I guess that's a good starting point, not reusing these bags, but you take to social media or you talk to farmers and you still hear from them that they have what they think are new bags that they've just picked up from their ag store, and they're trying to handle them on their loader, and it seems they're consistently having issues with either the bags splitting or those straps breaking, and then having what could be a 1,000 kilos dropping dead weight down to the ground.
That's exactly right. That's the scary part. And that's another really important that we go through bulker bags at induction stage. So when we have a new employee starting, or if I start with a farm, we'll even talk to the existing employees and go through safe work procedures of a bulker bag, and making sure that bulker bags are in good condition and free of cuts and tears before filling them, loading them, unloading them, just making sure that there's no damage and that they structurally haven't been compromised.
Are there ways around having to handle bulker bags and have them suspended on forklifts and front-end loaders suspended above air seeders or groupers or sheep feeders or whatever it may be?
Yeah, there's lots of methods out there, and I do have a safe work procedure. I'm really happy to share it with anybody that wants it too. We suggest that ensuring the lifting attachment has smooth rounded edges to avoid damaging or lifting the loop to start with, or piercing the bag, and then ensuring that the lifting attachment is secured correctly with the pins in, and then tilting the forks back slightly so that the bag can't fall over, keeping the load fairly low to the ground until you need to lift it, and not walking under a suspended load. That's probably the most important part, or not hopping into the bin and cutting it. So there's two methods that are recommended out there for cutting the bottom of a bulker bag, and sad to say that a lot of us, I'm sure, have been guilty of standing under a bulker bag and emptying it, but we just can't be doing that. So you can either use a long-handled knife attached to a pole, or there's a product on the market at the moment called a Jackie Bin Bag Splitter, and it's a bin with a pyramid-shaped blade mounted inside the hopper, and it comes in many different sizes, and that negates the need to put any part of our body underneath the bag.
So with the way bags are designed, I mean, that they have a spout directly under them, which implies that you're meant to reach under manually and untie that spout, but you're saying that do not do that.
Do not do that. There's another product out there too in the market. There's a few at the moment that are quite clever, where they can connect into the spout so that if it is a bag that can have multiple uses, it can be reused. But if it's a tie-up one, we're suggesting to save people's lives and to reach our vision of farming without fatalities, do not put any part of your body underneath there. Use a long-handled knife if you don't have a splitter, and attach the knife to a pole or similar, and just don't take that risk, because that's a lot of weight that can come down. And in the case of Damien, who was trapped underneath there, we don't want to see that happen again.
And you'd think it would be fair for farmers to expect to buy a product that's safe to use and not have to sort of come up with these workarounds. So do you think the bags themselves, that the design of them, the strength of the bag, the strength of the straps needs to be improved?
I think there's new products coming out all of the time, and now there are replacements such as boxes. But of course, in our farms, we're always going to have, it's going to take a long time to, if they do even look at wiping out bulker bags altogether, I think it's going to take a long time. So my aim is more to employ some safety systems around using bulker bags, in the knowledge that we know farmers are still going to use them. So let's get some information out there and help them use them safely.
And just right now, it's probably a peak risk period, I'd imagine, Sam, because a lot of these bags, they seed comes in them. Farmers are sowing at the moment. They're busy working long hours, working at night under the pump. So I guess this is a period of highest potential danger.
It is, and we've had a pretty good sowing in Victoria so far, but fatigue is probably starting to set in a little bit now, so now is a good time for those reminders to just take it slow and be careful. And even with our 20-kilo bags that we're hauling up to the top of the cedar, just making sure that they don't drop down. We did have a near miss the other day where one dropped down off the top of an air cedar. We want to make sure those sort of things don't happen.
And that's just another reminder, I suppose, of all of the different things that are happening on farms, that if you have the slightest slip up, they can have really grave consequences.
They can. I did write a little article recently about taking some food out to our farmers or some hot sausage rolls while they're fatigued into the night, so that we can get through this sowing season safely.
That's good advice there from Sam Pritchard, founder of farm safety consultancy People in Paddocks, speaking with Angus Verley about bulker bags. Some of your texts coming in are really interesting. Bulker bags are definitely a problem that needed to be handled with care. Another major issue is with single-use bags on how to recycle them. A major issue, re-all bags on farm. This needs to be addressed. And someone said, here's a small sample bulker bags boxed up waiting to be burnt. More issues to consider, as well as just OH&S. And there's a mighty amount filling in old fruit crates there. That's incredible. This one, though, says after a near miss, we cut up a chem shuttle, big hole in the middle to let the seed out. It goes on the shuttle frame. Bag goes on the shuttle frame. It's a lot safer. Really interesting thoughts coming in, and a major issue really for the industry to grapple with as well. We'll have to keep an eye on that. More texts, as more texts come in, I'll read them out to you in a moment, but we better keep moving as we head towards markets. And let's talk about a crop munching pest. It's been wreaking havoc in northern Australia, has been found in Victoria before, and is back with a vengeance in Gippsland. I'm talking about fall armyworm, which was only discovered in Australia in recent years, although a leading pest researcher says Victorian farmers should be vigilant but not alarmed about the rediscovery of fall armyworm in Victorian crops, which has found their way into Gippsland maize crops in the last week or so. Associate Professor Paul Yamina from CSER Australia says he expects these fall armyworm concerns to be short-lived.
It's a species that's fairly new to Australia. It was first detected on our shores back in 2020. And since that time, I guess, researchers and industry have been learning a lot about the impacts of fall armyworm to a whole variety of different crops. And fall armyworm is certainly a much bigger issue in northern Australia. And this year has been particularly bad in many parts of Queensland and northern New South Wales.
And so it mainly targets maize crops, is that right?
It is a polyphagous species. That just means it's not a species that just attacks one or two plants or crop types. It attacks a very wide variety of different plants, unfortunately. But yes, maize as well as sorghum are certainly some of the more favoured crops, and certainly where a lot of the issues, I guess, again, up north in Australia, but even, you know, getting to sweet corn, millet, pulses. And in fact, quite surprisingly, this year, it even quite recently, again in Queensland, has caused issues to oats, which was quite unusual.
And as you mentioned, Paul, it's a relatively new pest in Australia, but do you have any specific figures on how fall armyworm actually impacts yields in some of those main crops?
There's a lot of work going on at the moment to try to, I guess, answer some of those questions. Obviously, it's very much like, I guess, a number of other caterpillars, you know, some of the native budworms and corn earworm. It does present a little bit of a challenge in that it sometimes gets into the leaf whorls, which does make control more challenging, and in fact it can also make monitoring more challenging. But it's a species that acts very similar to many other caterpillars in that it chews on the stems, it will eat the flowering parts of plants.
There have been some reports of fall armyworm in crops in Gippsland, and last year, you know, we had reports in northern Victoria as well. What do you think is behind that? What do you think has brought fall armyworm down, as you say, from its main kind of target area at the moment in the north?
Being a species that does require quite high temperatures to reproduce and to survive, This is a species, fortunately for Victorian growers, that cannot survive year-round in our part of the world. So it's a species that requires high temperatures, and it doesn't certainly like cold temperatures. So it's a species that migrates down. It migrates very similar to other species like native budworm, which many people will be familiar with, on northerly winds. We typically experience, thus far over the last few years, we typically experience those flights, and when we start to hear reports, as you say, in northern Victoria and in Gippsland, those reports are typically over the summer months, sometimes extending into early autumn. Fortunately, though, this is not a species that will persist once we start to get cold conditions. It is a little bit of a surprise to be getting reports so late in the season. And I think the good news is that fall armyworm naturally will start to die off with these cold conditions. They just cannot survive down here.
That is Associate Professor Paul Yamina from CSER Australia speaking to Faith Tabaluyan about the recent rediscovery, I suppose, of fall armyworm in Gippsland crops. You're listening to The Country Hour. It is that time again. It is time to head to markets. To market. Let's go to Bairnsdale Cattle first. Brendan Fletcher has the cattle details for us. G'day.
G'day. Warrick numbers decreased to 750. That's 40 fewer than the sale of a fortnight ago, with most of the usual buyers operating in a dearer market. Quality was good in places, although limited, with cows representing over half of the sale. Trade cattle were in short supply. Grown cattle improved 35 to 55 cents. Cows lifted 20 to 35, with processors loading cows for an estimated 350 to 522 cents a kilogram carcass weight. Heavy bulls gained 17 cents. A handful of young steers and heifers sold to restockers from 200 to 260 cents. Grown steers and bullocks 260 to 310. Heavy Frisian manufacturing steers 210 to 250. Crossbreds 227 to 258. Heavy grown heifers showing good finish, 275 to 310. Most light and medium weight cows, 110 to 232. Heavyweights, 180 to 275. Heavy bulls, 224 to 256. This is Brendan Fletcher reporting for MLA.
Thanks, Brendan. Let's go to the sheep and lamb markets now with Leanne Dax.
Good afternoon. After last week's Anzac public holiday, numbers did jump up to 46,000 lambs and 16,000 sheep. Quality improved, with not the tail in the offering this week. Most export and domestic buyers made it to the sale, and the market was very erratic at times, and you needed shorter skinned lambs that were well shaped in both trade and export categories, or buyers did overlook them or drop the price. The best trade lambs hit 750 cents a kilogram carcass weight, but the averaged out at 680 to 705, selling at 125 to 177, 24 to 26, 170 to 190. Heavy lambs are unchanged to a few dollars steerer, 26 to 30, 174 to 209, averaging 660 cents. Over 30 kilos, 202 to 257. Merino lambs, if they were neat and had a bit of weight, 124 to 198. Lambs to restock and feed, with weight and frame, $98 to $155. A few runs of mutton sold early this morning. Heavy mutton, $80 to $108. And the trade sheep was selling at $60 to $66. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
Thanks very much for that, Leanne. A lot of your thoughts coming in on bulker bags. This one saying, I think there's a solution to the bulker bag problem. Only put bags on a specific platform or pallet with a mesh floor with a hole in the middle and a collapsible funnel, and slide open and close to the flow from there. Brett says it's not the way people are using these bags, it's the rubbish quality that are currently on the market. I've had three break this year without warning. Absolutely no need to rely on the straps of the bag, as the bag and its frame can be secured to the front end loader frame, says this text. Another one saying, Warwick, bulker bags are a bit different to us old blokes who were carrying full bags of super and seed on our backs. Didn't kill many of us, but it was definitely wearing most of us out, I suppose. That's a different perspective, but we can find a better way though, can't we? I'd hope so. Anyway, this one says, it's not the bulker bag that scares me. When I'm under it trying to undo the bow tie to release the ton of product, it's the front end loader and the tractor hydraulics that worries me. When is that hose going to blow if it fails while I'm under the bag, says a Cactus Jack. I'm Cactus Jack, sorry, old mate, says Leo. Sorry, Leo, got there eventually, didn't I? And on the issue of domestic violence, Pete in Ballarat says, I applaud the Country Hour and the rest of the ABC in being brave enough to enable conversation about this reality. Unfortunately, as you so quickly demonstrated, there are plenty of people who want to shut down these conversations because it's a little uncomfortable to hear the reality. Reality, women are scared, they're tired, and they're angry, and they have every reason to be because it is their reality. So they're very well may be not all men, but it's enough men. Enough men that have caused women and girls to be scared. So maybe the conversations are uncomfortable. Frankly, my discomfort is a pea under the mattress in comparison to being terrified to walk alone, to check to who is watching you when you buy petrol and to need to carry the keys between your fingers. That's what I'll leave you on.